Welcome back to the Legends Among Us podcast, a podcast devoted to the veterans and troopers of 3rd Cavalry Regiment. My name is Chaplain Jason Phipps, and with us this episode, we have returning back from the dark corners of Fort Benning, Georgia, after having competed in the Best Ranger competition for 2026. We have with us Captain Thomas Emberton and First Lieutenant Josh Langenfelter. Gentlemen, welcome to the show. Good to have you. Thank you for being here.
Yes, sir. Glad to be back.
I'm kind of finishing where I started last year for the first episode that we did, the inaugural episode. We had Nick Basil and Dom D'Annunzio, the competitors from last year. I know we had two teams last year, but they were the only two that I got to interview. So super pumped to have you guys on as the last episode that I'm recording. And then moving forward, actually, your guys' chaplain, Matthew Trammell, is going to take this thing over and he will take it to the next level. So very excited about that. But anyway, just really glad you guys are here. Wanted to hear about your experience. I guess we'll go kind of go back to the beginning. What was the motivator, if you will? What was the incentive for you guys to compete this year?
For me, you know, I obviously didn't have a lot going on as I was transitioning, or, you know, moving towards my transition out. And I was a battalion edge, not a very work heavy job. Yes. So I had a lot of free time, and obviously I think everyone in the infantry that at least has a ranger tab is aware of Best Ranger. And obviously it's something really cool to just go out and compete and fun to compete. And, you know, Josh, they kind of picked him to do it around October-ish, I guess. And the guy he was going to do it with ended up not being able to. So he kind of asked me if I would do it. And I really had no reason to say no. I had no valid excuse, and obviously would never have that opportunity ever again. So that's kind of how it started for me in December.
So really December is like when you mentally started to
I think I went into
prepare yourself.
Because I told Josh, I was like, you know, let me check and make sure people are cool with me doing it. You know, I'm getting out soon, so they may not be. So I went and kind of talked to Colonel Lensing about it. And, you know, I said, you know, there's not really a lot of people that have more free time to train right now than I do.
Right.
And he was all about it, luckily. So it's kind of, the beginning of December, I think, is kind of when I started working out. It may have been right before HBL, but I was training for a half Ironman, so I had a little bit of, you know, an aerobic base, I guess, built up. So it wasn't a super hard move.
Nice. Okay. What about you, Josh?
Yeah, so
what was the impetus?
It was right before, I want to say, platoon live fire and sticks for our squadron. And when Major Chenier was still in the S3 office, he brought me into his office. He was like, hey, we have platoon sticks and live fire coming up. We have an opening. Do you want to take a platoon or do you want to do a train up for BRC? And on the spot, I was like, I'll do BRC.
Yeah.
Like, that's awesome. Highly competitive. And back when I played Army football, it was just like the highs of playing in the games and stuff like that. And just an excuse to go train and shoot and run around and have fun. And so, I was like, absolutely, I'll do that. That was probably around October. So I had plenty of time to start training up. And then we had a lot of people that showed initial interest of doing it. A few partners fell through and then asked around with all the tab guys, like, hey, can you do it? And he was reluctant enough to say, yeah. And I was super blessed to have him.
Have him on the team. Just a note, great to see you guys compete, as I've probably told you all in the past. Was stationed at Fort Benning, but really never got to see the extent of the competition itself because we were either deployed or we were somewhere else and the jort cycle didn't allow us to observe for that whole weekend. So it was great that to see you all compete, to get a little bit more insight into what it looked like in at this season of my life and career, and to see you guys do very well, to see the progression of 3CR within BRC trend in an upward direction, and excited about what we could be doing next year, what type of team we might have together next year. But what I want to do is just back up a little bit more. I typically do this with guests that I have on the show and just ask, like, and either one of you can jump in. How did you end up in the Army? How did you end up at 3CR? It's a little different path, obviously, for officers, but I would be kind of curious to know what the journey was to get here.
My grandfather was in the Air Force. My dad was in the Navy, both short stints, you know, 4 to 5 years. So it was kind of always kind of in the cards for me. I would say when I got in high school, it kind of fell out of the cards. My parents basically forced me to take the ASVAB. Not that that pertains to being an officer, right. But they were like, you know, I think it's a good place for you to go, blah, blah, blah. But my dad always said, he said, you know, if you join, like, you should look at being an officer. And so he had kind of thrown the ROTC thing out there. And I knew I was going to go to Western Kentucky from, I mean, the day I was born. I'm a fifth generation Hilltopper, so it was kind of
okay.
Automatic for me. And then I had a buddy that was he's my best friend. He was like, I'm going to enlist in the Army. And I remember I was sitting in class and I was like, well, I guess I'll join the Army. So I texted my dad, I was like, and I think I'll do ROTC. So we went down to the university, met with the instructor. I legitimately had no idea what an officer was. I had no idea. I really didn't know anything about the Army. He said, yeah, you can go to college for 4 years and you can join the infantry. And I was like, yep, all right, sounds good. That's kind of how it got started for me. And then obviously I found out what an officer was and kind of their role in the Army and everything. And then went to IBULIC. I don't know how it is now, but when I was there, you had no say in where you went. You could rank them one to whatever. Mm-hmm. There was no OML. There was no two-way marketplace. It was just kind of where the cards fell. We had a ton of guys get Fort Hood. Luckily, I got 3CR and not Bradley. So
yeah,
that's on the bright side for me. But that's kind of how I fell into the Army and 3CR.
So you've only been at 3CR then?
Correct.
And I'm assuming the same is true for you as well. Only been to 3CR?
Yes,
yeah. Yeah, that's true, because you literally graduated from Ranger School, what, like less than a year ago?
Yep.
Or around a year ago.
April 23rd, so a day or a year from tomorrow.
Yeah. Wow. Well, so you have an interesting path to arrive at 3CR. I mean, your sister and your wife were telling me and showing me pictures of you prior to coming into the Army, but love for you to just share from your own mouth like how you ended up here.
Yeah, so my parents were both in the Air Force. My dad's a retired mess sergeant out of Tyndall Air Force Base. And further back, my grandpa was a gunner in a Huey back in Vietnam. And he had won like 3 Purple Hearts. So like growing up, wow. He was like my hero.
Yeah.
Like got to be around him a lot. And I was like, yeah, I want to be in the Army. And so fast forward to my junior year of high school, I was pretty good at football at that point. And that summer league going into my senior year, I went to a Spartan race and a few of my buddies wanted to go. And I was like, absolutely, let's go do it. And I was at Fort Benning. And so this is in 2018. And we went to go do the race. The heat before me was actually the best Ranger competition going on right before that.
Okay.
So I got to see all like the top 1% go through this obstacle course. I was like, man, these guys are flying. Yeah. This is awesome. And so the regiment was out there. They had all their demonstrations. And I was like, oh, I want to do this. And so I went and talked to my dad. He's like, yeah, if you're going to do it, you're going to be an officer, though. So then I still talking with one of the regiment recruiters. I was like, hey, how do I do this? Like, my dad wants me to be an officer. Still want to do it. Like, what's the pathway? But I do want to play college football. And he was like, oh, have you ever heard of West Point? I said, no. And so then he was like, oh, go look into it. And so I then, that same summer, I went, flew up to New York, went, did their football camp. Wasn't offered at that time, but I think I was on their watch list after that. And then later that year, ended up, while I was applying, getting the offer after I'd actually already been accepted into the school. Went, did the 4 years. And then my first year, senior year, we have post night. And so based off where you rack and stack, your OML, you then have your pick of posts. And so I actually picked first cav because I was like, yeah, my grandpa was from that unit. And so like my goal was to go and be from the same squadron or battalion, which was the headhunters over there in first cav. And I was like, oh, I like, I'm going to try and get in the same battalion as my grandpa. But after Ranger school, my orders ended up getting switched to 3CR. And I was like, oh, they're an SBCT. Like, oh, sweet. Like, it's actually better.
Yeah.
So I was actually very happy to get picked here.
I'm tracking as well as at Jacksonville. You also went to tryouts for. How did that intersect your path to coming into the Army?
Yeah, so my last 2 years of college football, I was, according to PFF, top 5 tight end, number 1 blocking tight end in that draft class. Unfortunately, I got hurt my senior year tore my right ankle, and then 10 days leading up to my pro day, I pulled my hamstring. So I was very handicapped in what I could do for the pro day. And so the question mark was probably my 40 time, if I'm being honest.
Yeah.
And so, and then when I go and pull a hamstring, can't really do anything. So my draft stock basically plummeted at that point. Yeah. So Jacksonville Jaguars, they reached out like, hey, like we would like to have you down for mini camp and we'll see where it goes. And sure enough, they flew me down, tried out. It was awesome time. I did very well. And then they offered me a slot. They're like, hey, we're going to put you on the short list. It's like, it's not a guaranteed spot. Someone goes down, you're the next guy we're going to call. And, but unfortunately I'm not getting paid. Like I'm still technically an undrafted. So I didn't make like the full roster, but if someone goes down, I'm the guy they call. We had a few guys who had done that before and we're not getting paid by the Army. I delayed my commission. So I went through this whole professional sports packet to essentially delay my commission, and it had already been approved all the way up to, I think, SecDef or Secretary of the Army. So after that, I was like, you know what? I've seen it time and time again where guys are waiting for a phone call and it never comes. And then come January 1st the next year, they're already trying to get back into the Army. Like I'd rather just cut my losses, and God wanted me to do it, I would have had a healthy hamstring and ankle. I was like, I'm just going to cut my loss. And then I went to superintendent staff, Gerald Gillen. And I was like, hey, sir, how do I get back essentially in commission and graduate on time so that way I can go and join the Army? And so they did everything they could, got my packet withdrawal, and allowed me to graduate on time. Except at that time, it was a week before graduation, so they had to speed roll this thing through the necessary signatures to get it approved. And so I was able to graduate on time, except I still had all my football weight. I had, from then until August, to essentially lose all my football weight and then go to Ranger School afterwards. So,
got it.
Yep.
So that's a pretty radical shift. I remember younger guys, obviously metabolism was the issue. Older guys, like sleep was the issue. So from what Alex told me, you dropped a ton of weight, like an exceptional amount of weight after graduating from that school. So I'm assuming some of that was probably football weight.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. So appreciate both you guys sharing that. BRC, really want to get into this. First question is, did you guys have an opportunity to talk to other competitors? And the reason that I ask is because as people are listening to this, there are exceptional individuals who wear the tab who are able to compete. It's not like all of you guys are Olympic class athletes or potential NFL players that are competing and winning this competition or doing well. But did you get an opportunity to talk to some of their guys to see what their backgrounds were coming into this competition as well?
We talked to a ton of people, you know, competitors week, you're there with the guys talking to them.
That's true.
And then also we both knew, you know, some people competing. I think there were some other West Point football players that played with Josh that were competing on the 10th Mountain and 4th ID team. And then the guy that got fourth place with the old guard, he was a PL with me in 3CR. So I knew him pretty well. And then there's some other guys, whether I knew them through Ranger School or Iabolic or, you know, other events that happened throughout your Army career. So I'd say there was probably 10 guys that we, between the two of us, that we knew on a personal level.
Similar degrees of athleticism. Obviously, all of you guys are fit. Everybody has a degree of like mental toughness to get through some of these events. But then there's like that genetic wild card that some people have and some people don't. Did you guys think that that played a role at all in people excelling through the different phases?
I mean, I'm sure it does. Like, you know, there's probably guys that blessed with some endurance stuff. There's some guys that are blessed with strength. You know, I think it's fair to say that this person did good because they're genetically gifted. You know,
you
know, you can have genetics, but you still got to work hard and, you know, use those genetics to your advantage if you do have them. But you know, I think the guys that did really well just, you know, trained really well. Whether they have genetic gifts or not, you know, they busted it, trained not just the physical portion, but all the tactical, the cognitive, and the mental stuff like that. So there's some genetic stuff that plays a role, but the guys that got 61st place could have had some genetic gift that they just didn't utilize or, you know, who knows?
So. Well, and that's kind of what I was hoping you would say, because I don't want people to like listen to this and think there's no way I can compete in this and do well. It really is, I would say, a combination of many things, the mental, the tactical proficiency, obviously the physical endurance, but the heart I've talked a lot about eudaimonic well-being and how that is a sense of like contentment in the midst of all circumstances and how you're able to thrive and how that affects your physiology in many ways. It's the absence of negativity, but not in its entirety, but in controlled environments like where you guys are in, you're able to control those thoughts, that those discouraging thoughts that might prevent you from performing better physically, because they do have an inhibiting effect, but you guys managed to push through that. If you could pinpoint for yourselves individually, what was the key thing that like kept you going? Was it something internal, intrinsic, or something external or extrinsic to who you are as an individual?
I'll say for me, it was my whole thing was like, no matter how, excuse my candor, shitty it was going to be, it's only 2 days. So it's like, you can get through anything in 2 days.
You knew there was an end to it. Mm-hmm. What about you, Thomas?
And I would say the competitive factor is a big thing. Like for me, like I was terrified to put on a bad performance. Like truly, like I was terrified. Obviously, historically, 3CR has not performed well. Like I truly was terrified that I was going to mess up somewhere and I was going to come and not fit enough and wash out. So that I think that was a big push during the train up. And, you know, like I tell people, you know, they say don't fear failure, but I think fearing failure in some instances is good, pushes you to drive more and work more. And then you know, once we got there, I think that's when the competitive really kicked in. It was like, okay, you know, we're here with these guys that, you know, they think they're the fittest. They think they're better than we are, as they should. You know, that's the competitive nature. And then having everyone down there was awesome. You know, you, Sergeant Major, my family, Josh's family, Cap Marturi, a couple other lieutenants that we work with. That was awesome because you really get in the suck and the grittiness in those big endurance events. And then, you know, when you do have that little bit of downtime, it's really good to kind of release and get out of that competitiveness for a second. And then, you know, when it's time, turn it back on. So I think having that ability just to, you know, laugh with y'all, talk with y'all, turn the competitive on and off when you needed to. Yeah. You know, that was a big, big push as well.
I'm just kind of curious, how much did like the crowd and the publicity feed your competitive spirit? Did that help at all or was that a hindrance?
No, absolutely. I think especially in that opening event, the water cans I knew were going to be daunting for me. You know, I tell people I probably did that workout 10 times leading up to BRC just because that was like, you know what, I knew I was not great at farmer's carries and Josh is extremely great at them. So I knew that for me, that was going to be the weak point. You know, seeing the year prior, they did it on the night ruck when there's no fans, you know, it's just you, your partner, and your water cans. You know, this, you have a ton of people and everyone perform, not everyone, but, you know, a lot of people perform better when people are watching, I think, and people cheering you on. It was aggravating at times. Like I told people, I was like, God, man, my dad's making me so mad right now, cheering me on. But it was great for the people there because you can see like, all right, this is the first event and this is awful. And I think it's an eye opener to the fans or the people watching. It's like this 72 hours or however long it's going to be really bad for them.
And talk about that first event. Like what exactly, because water can carries, obviously I was there. I know what you guys did, but not everybody knows exactly what that buy-in event was.
So the buy-in, it starts out a mass start run in kit. Yep. So your plate carrier, we ran down, it was probably roughly 2.5 miles. You run down, grab a 40-pound sandbag, and then you and your partner, you know, run with that sandbag back. As soon as you get back, drop the sandbag, drop your plate carrier, and then you run down to the pond. It's about 1.5 miles, jump into the pond, swim 400 or 500 meters in the pond.
And it was cold that day.
It was cold, but it felt good.
Felt great.
Yeah. That's good. Get out of the pond, run 1.5 miles back, and then your water cans are waiting for you at the start point, and it was about 0.9 miles to the turnaround. 2 water cans per person. You carry them.
And they're what, like 45, 50
about
pounds?
About 50 pounds. And the only authorized carry method is, you know, the farmer's carry. You can't use your body at all. It's in your hands. And you carry it, and when you sit them down, you got to turn around, run to the start point, and you just do that constantly.
Did you guys know personally how many miles you ran? I know a lot of people said 15 to 18 for
no. So actually, I reached out to the Black Ohm company.
Okay.
And so they're gathering that data for us now.
Oh, wow.
I do know they released the top 16 finishers. They released what they put day one. I want to say the team that went the furthest day one did 56 miles. I don't know exactly what the breakdown of that was, but.
And that's obviously not just the water can carry.
Correct.
That's
like that would be from
running between ranges.
Yeah. That'd be from that mass start run. And I think it ended with the end of the ruck march, I believe.
Wow.
To the end of night one, right before night stakes. But
yeah. Yeah. I did some pull-ups and some kettlebell carries like the week after I got back. And I was like, cause at the time I'm thinking I could do this. And I was, no, I went to the bird. I was doing that. I'm like, no way. I'm going to do it. No way would I be able to do this. So I'm still like just in awe of that event alone. But we saw a lot of human suffering. Obviously, the people who are kind of along the route can see the degrees of human suffering. But I imagine you guys were kind of in your own little world. Where did you go when it was really challenging to kind of carry those water cans?
I mean, I think it was just you went to that competitive nature, really. It was like, I do think of, you know, a big reason that we made it through there is a lot of guys started walking. They would walk. Yeah. They put their water cans down and they would walk to the turnaround point or walk to the start line and walk back. And Josh and I ran, and I would say, let's just say we went 15 miles. We probably ran 14.75. So I think that was a big advantage for us. It was like one thing I learned from doing those carries so much is later on in that workout, it didn't matter if I was getting a 5-minute rest or a 10-minute rest. It didn't affect the distance I could carry that much. So it was maybe in the beginning, it was more beneficial to take a little bit more time because you kind of can recover better. But, you know, when you're so far into that workout, for me at least, it was more beneficial to run and get back to those cans as fast as possible, opposed to trying to gain a little bit more rest to go an extra 10 meters. Honestly, seeing people like walk, people getting the FLA, people throwing up on the side of the road.
Yeah.
That I guess that's where you kind of found the
motivation.
Push, the motivation. Yeah. To, okay, like let's push it past these guys.
No, that's good stuff. Well, again, I want to backtrack a little bit. Describe what training was like leading up to actually before going down to Fort Benning.
Yeah, so most of our training was programmed with our H2F team, specifically Michael, who was absolutely amazing. He did a really good job programming our runs and lifts, and I want to say like specifically the lifts, because not once did I feel like on my runs that the lifts had fatigued me so much where my runs were going to suffer because of it. And honestly, like all the lactate inducing exercises, like we were doing these oxidative squats where basically you're not hitting the top or bottom of the motion, you're essentially just staying in that kind of limbo, just going up and down, just building as much lactate as possible.
Wow.
And your legs are just falling apart by the time you're hitting halfway through the set. Yeah. But now his programming was honestly like amazing, especially with lifting. And then for our running, we basically did exactly what was on the program. We probably upped the mileage a little bit more on the weekends. We were running, I think, starting off the half marathon every weekend and then building up to around 25 miles every weekend, on at least for me on a Saturday, just trying to build up the base to keep up with him, because I knew that I was going to be the limiting factor when it came to the running. So I probably should have focused a little bit more on the threshold runs, so that way specifically on the buy-in that I'd be able to keep up with him a little bit better and manage my heart rate. But
was it largely just, I mean, I think about the RPAT, which I'll talk about here in a little bit, but it was it largely a legs event?
Yes.
For the weekend, like it's all legs and it's core.
I think I noticed it on the Malvesti whenever we started climbing the rope and we did the 6 chin-ups before and after. I was like, these chin-ups and rope climb are nothing. Still relatively fresh. I was just cooked on my legs.
Yeah, I don't think it was you guys, but there was somebody who just could not get up the rope. Even locking in with a J-hook, they couldn't, which tells me that their legs were pretty smoked at that point. If they couldn't, and they tried it multiple times, couldn't get up the rope. Yeah, it looked largely like a legs-driven weekend to remember.
It was definitely, it was a feeling in the legs that I'd never felt before. And it started somewhere in that water can carry.
Yeah.
And it, you know, it stayed obviously through the whole event. Got better when the sun would come up and the sun would go down and everyone would leave and, you know, you'd go in your dark place and
right.
wobble through the woods.
Yes. Speaking of dark places, it was good to have people out there. I don't think we had as much of a representation there last year as we did this year, but like we couldn't follow you guys everywhere. So how did you do in those moments? And obviously, you know, you think about something like Ranger School, you have lots of dark moments where you're just by yourself, but how did you guys go from the fanfare of it all in one moment to just the isolation blackness, if you will, of being alone with your pain? There's a great metaphor there somewhere, I'm sure.
Yeah. Being alone with your pain. I don't know. I think it's just something you know going into. It's like, yeah, this is going to be a quiet, dark walk. Like it was no surprise to any competitor. Like you know what night one's gonna look like, and you know what night two is gonna look like. I wouldn't necessarily say there's something you know we had to dig in and find, but because you still have that competitive nature.
Yeah,
I think the competitive nature trumps all. So it was definitely different. You know, would we have been faster on the ruck had we had fans? I don't know. I'm gonna guess not by much, but maybe.
Okay. So you guys had a coach. You had Captain Arturi was mm-hmm. helping you through that process. Did you guys have any other coaches? I know a lot of teams like hire coaches or like their unit pays for coaches. Pretty confident we didn't do anything like that, but wasn't sure if you guys had anybody else that you hired.
No, we didn't hire anyone. We had a full H2F team. So, you know, we had Michael, our trainer, Captain Steve Gay was our physical therapist. Tam yeah. was our mental domain coach. And then yeah. Lieutenant Nass was our nutritionist. So we had a full team there, which was really good, especially Josh and I were definitely on two different ends of the nutrition standpoint. Josh okay. was a little bit heavier, probably 225, I guess, yeah. when he started. So he's trying to trend down.
Yeah.
And then I was probably 185 when I started and trying to not lose too much weight.
Yeah.
So it was good there. And Colonel Lensing was a good help as well. He's a two-time competitor. So he kind of put us in touch with some people, gave you know his standpoint on some stuff. And then obviously, Cap Marturi, three-time competitor, was in a great spot in 2024 as partner towards ACL. So Cap Marturi was super knowledgeable. Probably not many more people that have competed as many times as he has and done as well, you know, in the last 5 years. So he was obviously very helpful from a knowledge-based standpoint. And then, you know, we both reached out to guys we knew that competed prior, got their opinion on some things, kind of what it looked like last year. I think sure. Josh reached out to Dom a lot. You know, yes, Captain Arturi was the coach. We didn't hire anyone, but we also had plenty of other people that assisted and helped in ways that, you know, a coach would.
I would affirm just the fact that we had as many people to help you come alongside you guys as we did, because we did not have that robust an H2F team last year. Mm-hmm. It was like Captain Gay and that was it. So we had no strength and conditioning coaches. We had no mental performance coach, no nutritionist. So yeah, I would attribute a great degree of your success to their contributions.
We owe a lot to the H2F team that they put in a lot of time. And that was their first time building a plan for that. So we were kind of both going through the learning phase of that. And obviously, you know, Cap Marturi and Colonel Lensing sat down, kind of went over, viewed the plan they came up with, you know, made sure it made sense, talked about some things. And we adjusted stuff on the fly with the HUF team. You know, we also utilized First Calf put together, you know, they had brigade level support for ranges, and not just for their best ranger team, but for all of their infantry week competition or competitors. So they allowed us to come shoot some ranges with them and stuff nice. Like that. And Josh and I kind of went out on our own. Austin Jordan, one of the guys we were PL with, kind of got us into some competitive steel shooting matches and then linked us in with an old AMU instructor. I went home for Christmas, stole about 3,000 rounds of 9mm from my dad, drove it back down here, and you know, we shot that and
yeah.
you know, spent some money, luckily on our end, to work on some stuff that maybe other teams in the past haven't.
What do you think you've contributed to the culture of 3CR coming back, having competed, having done better than the previous team, and knowing that we're going to go back and send a team next year to compete with the intent of seeing them maybe even place higher?
So I think I can speak on it. When RCSM was there, him being there was awesome, showing his support. And then I think him bringing it back to the regiment and yeah. then him talking to the RCO, and then at the stable call, the RCO is like, we're going to take this thing legit next yeah. year. And so he was saying, we're going to get top 10 finishes next year. And so I think everyone was kind of like,
let's do this.
Yeah. And then like at the troop level, like I went, had breakfast with some of the PSGs along with the other PLs. And they're like, sir, what happened? You didn't place? That's good. They're not satisfied with how we did. And neither are we.
Sure.
So it's good. There's a higher expectation there. So I think as long as that bar keeps rising, that'll be amazing for the culture's a rising standard.
Absolutely. Any additional thoughts?
Yeah. I mean, I think it definitely, people noticed it. Like Josh said, we didn't quite meet the goal that we wanted to. And our main goal was top 16. We wanted to finish all 3 days. And then, you know, what we kind of said is our second goal, or at least what I said, you know, as I leave 3CR is like, you know, I want to do well enough to where people will notice and we'll really start focusing on BRC and other infantry week stuff as a unit. So, okay, maybe let's put a 3-shop captain in charge and he can coordinate some ranges and coordinate some more broad scale training. And I think we did. I had a lot of people hit me up that used to be in 3CR and they'd be like, dang, dude, like pretty crazy you made it that far with 3CR. I think it was the best. Someone said it was the best we've done in a decade. I really do think there will be a lot more assets to the competitors next year from 3CR. And then, you know, that was one of our goals. So I think that's something that's good. And if Josh chooses to do it again next year, that there's no reason they won't make day three. So
sure. And I'm sure the RCSM and even the RCO, and I would certainly say for myself, look at this as like a recruiting point. This mm-hmm. is a way that we can leverage people to come to 3CR. Gone, I believe, in many ways, is the nationally publicized negative stigma that has been attached to 3CR. I think we're the pendulum is starting to swing back the other way, where we're building troopers of virtue and lethality. We do take our jobs seriously, and we have strong individuals that are leading teams and leading squads and doing great things for the organization. So it was good in that sense, obviously, and I think it will continue to progress as we send you guys out, as we send guys to Lacerda Cup and Best Mortar and all these other competitions, and we see them progress in their professionalism and their competitive spirit. For you guys individually, though, now that let's just kind of distill it down to you as individuals, what have you wanted to, or I should say, what do you want to take away from this for yourself, both now and going into the future? I know, Josh, you've shared a little bit about your desire to go to RASP, and absolutely, this is a good look for anybody who's wanting to progress throughout their career, but what have you guys used this or leveraged this experience for so far?
I mean, I don't know, leverage-wise, how much I'm going to be able to leverage it, just because I think even in the Army, there's not maybe a true understanding of just how hard BRC is. And certainly in the civilian world, like, you know, I can tell them, hey, I did, you know, I got 23rd at Best Ranger competition. And it's like, oh, sounds cool.
That's where you got to compare it to something like
Tough
Mudder, you know, the Spartan race to get perspective.
It'd be a lot of Spartan races.
Yeah.
but I mean, from a personal standpoint, like, those couple of those goals that we set out that I just went over, like I said, I feel confident and comfortable that we kind of put a better spotlight on 3CR externally and internally. And then, like you said, with Josh trying to go to RASP, I know at one point in time that was the only goal I had in the Army. And so I wanted to do well enough and help him out in the competition enough to where, you know, he could leverage this BRC in his application. And I think we definitely did that. So I would say, between those three goals, I'm comfortable with the performance. And obviously, I said it really bugged me and bothers me that we didn't make day three, but I guess that's more of a selfish goal. And then unselfishly, like I said, hopefully brought more light onto 3CR Best Ranger, and then, you know, hopefully help Josh get to where he wants to go.
Okay, well, I didn't want him to like 100% speak on your behalf, so feel free to
I'll speak on more of leveraging the experience of that train up. Because I got to do a lot of things maybe like a typical young lieutenant officer might not be able to do, going and shooting a sniper rifle, going in and placing an 81mm mortar and going and setting up an HF radio, which I've never touched before, and going and learning these skills and then passing it on to my platoon and my peers and those around me. So I'd say like using that experience where I learned all these skills and passing that on to the next group of troopers that come through. So I think that's where that transfer of knowledge needs to occur, is within that train up that I had.
you use some crew serve weapons that you'd never used before and that we don't have in our arms rooms. So if somebody were to come to you, either a peer or maybe an NCO, because obviously when we send two officers, we got to have to do like an ETP. Mm-hmm. Typically an NCO or enlisted guy has to be a part of that team. But if anyone who is qualified to compete came to you and asked you, why should I go to this event? What would you tell them? Why should I go through all this suffering and train up? What would you say?
I'd say pressure is a privilege.
It's interesting.
Pressure, like, it matters. Like,
it does.
Being able to go out there and know, like, hey, if I mess this up, there's going to be a lot of eyes on it. Or if, hey, I succeed, there's going to be a lot of eyes on it. A lot of people go through life and they never have the privilege of being pressured and have that, those eyes on them. Yeah. So, like, it's your time to shine.
Or they choose to avoid that pressure, which many people can do in the Army. So I like that perspective because it does it. It not only is it either make you look really bad or look you really good, but it also refines your character as an individual. Whether you're in the Army or not, you're going to experience pressure. If you desire to pursue any passion in life, there's going to be some anxiety that comes with that. So what about you, Thomas? Any thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a way to, you know, discipline yourself. I think there's a big difference in, you know, I work out every day, to, you know, the difference being I'm training for beauty. It's totally different. You know, you're working out 2 to 3 times a day. You're running 70 to 80 miles a week, rucking. It's definitely another step up in discipline. It's really good because, you know, when you're just working out to work out, you miss a day, it only affects you. Whereas, okay, well, if I take it easy this day or I skip this day, it's not just hurting me, it's hurting my partner. So anyone that would want to do it, you know, I would say be completely bought in. I think there's a lot of people that say they want to do it and say they're about it, and then it comes time, I got this going on, I got that going on. So, you know, anyone that wants to do it, be 100% locked in for 6 to 8 months and, you know, train like you've probably never trained before.
I find the event itself fascinating when I look it through the lens of being created in the image of God, because it's every human being is pushing beyond human potential. Even just in the train up, you guys are pushing beyond what is probably the normally perceived human potential. Even within an organization like 3CR, where we train pretty hard and we have people who work, like you said, work out a lot, but don't know what it's like to go beyond that threshold of limitation that we create in our minds. And you're forced to do that in an event like this, even just to get through the buy-in, or even, I would say, even just to get into the competition itself, you've already made a decision within your mind that I have to go beyond what is normal in terms of mental and physical constraints that exist within the culture of this organization specifically. So it's always been impressive to me to see that happen. I super appreciate having you both on here. I am going to make a quick plug. We're doing a spiritual fitness event on 1 May over at Moselle Field. And I think I told you guys this, we're going to run the RPAT, which is the Ranger Physical Assessment Test. For those who are listening and don't know what the RPAT is, it's a 30-minute, 35-minute, depending on how fast you run it. Kind of a grueling experience, but nothing more brutal than what you guys experienced events. And then we're doing a prayer breakfast afterwards. So it would be awesome to have you guys come out there competing. I think actually the nutritionist is going to be out there. And I think Captain Gay, our PT manager, program manager, will also be out there. But otherwise, guys, great to see you. Glad your recovery is going well. And again, thanks for coming on the show.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Awesome. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, absolutely. Appreciate it. That was Captain Thomas Emberton and First Lieutenant Josh Langenfelter, both from Sabre Squadron. Two great guys who really represented 3CR well this year at the Best Ranger competition. So great to have them on. Hey, listen, if you liked what you heard, please leave some comments with your favorite streaming platform. It's always great to hear from you all and to continue to build momentum for the podcast. Very much looking forward to Chaplain Trammell, who is also from Sabre Squadron, taking over the reins. Have a great week. Aiyah.